Hey, welcome to the Upland Nation. Glad you are a citizen, at least for, about an hour every week here on the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden, your host. Another great discussion in store for you today. The founder, of Wild Rose Kennels. You met the current owner, but you'll meet the founder and the author of Absolutely Positively Gun Dog Training. His name is Robert Milner. Lots to come about that and how it works and why it works and all of that. The Upland Nation is outfitted by the folks at Cabela's. My name is Scott Linden. In addition to our in-depth discussion about dog training and dog behavior, we'll also cover some public access tips, hunting strategy, dog handling advice. We'll go on a little adventure or two. And as always, a few tips and tactics. So, how's your week going? You sheltering in place while still getting in some dog training, I hope, and staying close to the family, too. As you hear over and over again, my challenge with Flick these days is steadiness to wing shot and fall, and every day we're getting just a little bit closer. You know, you train on pigeons, and then you wonder, well, what else is going to happen when you get off pigeons? Luckily, we have a whole bunch of valley quail out behind the house, and once in a while we'll find them. Today, progress. Flick held a point on a valley quail female who flew hard and low right over his head. He moved about 4 feet, but without any encouragement from me, that's all he did. And I consider that a small victory. How about yourself? What are you working on these days, and are you making any progress? Let me know on the Facebook pages. Love to hear about what you're doing and how you're doing it, because I am a constant student of everything. And if you want to learn more, of course, a couple of the new videos out on the Facebook page and my YouTube page as well, on public access hunting around here on South Dakota. I'll give you some how-tos, some why-tos, and then a little checklist in the current edition of Pointing Dog Journal that I authored for Jake Smith over there that might get you ahead of the curve when it comes time to go hunting this fall. And gosh dang it, we will go hunting this fall. Things are loosening up. Let's hope that it's still loosened even more as we get to fall and bird hunting season. Okay, a couple quick announcements before we jump into our discussion with Robert Milner, the founder of Wild Rose Kennels and now at Duck Hill Kennels. First off, Sage and Breaker gun care products crafted at the highest caliber. Good news for everybody who's been asking. Both the long gun and handgun cleaning mats are back in stock. And if you want to hear about that kind of stuff the moment it happens, sign up for their mailing list at sageandbreaker.com. Lots of bundles on sale at dogtra.com. Whether you want the T&B Dual that I use all the time on Flick, or you want some other training collar, bark collar, or anything else in the way of dog training collars and related equipment, it's all at dogtra.com. All right, enough of that commercial chatter. Although I do appreciate your support, sponsors, and I hope you all listening will support them as well with your business. But right now, it's time to get to the phone, and Robert Milner, the founder of Wild Rose Kennel and now Duck Hill Kennels, and what I think might be the oldest breeder and trainer of British Labrador Retrievers in the entire continent. Robert, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Scott. Glad to be here.
Now, back when you were looking at all of that sort of thing, what attracted you so much to British Labradors?
Well, I ran, I'll give you a quick breakdown. I came off active duty in the Air Force in 1972 and opened Wild Rose, and I was training American Labradors for American field trials and also gun dogs, and I did that for about 10 years, and I got pretty burned out, and I was about ready to hang up the towel, because the dogs were, it was pretty hard work, and my dogs were not the most cooperative in the world. And about that time, I happened to go to England and ran into met a guy named Morty Turner Cook, who was a retired British Army major that swam off the beach at Dunkirk. And Morty and I hit it off, and Morty introduced me to their shooting and to the dogs over there and the training. And I looked at all that and said, this is the way it's supposed to be. And when I got back home, I said, I proceeded to get rid of the American dogs and start bringing over the British dogs. It made my life a lot more pleasant and a lot more fun.
Oh, I can only imagine, you know, having been around the field trial world a little bit, not as a competitor, but as a helper, if you will, in many regards, it's pretty intense. And I would imagine the client side of that is even more so. You know, fundamentally, just for the record, explain, if you can, briefly, the difference between, say, a British-style Labrador and an American-style Labrador and how that translates to the field.
Mainly, it's the main difference is in the breeding selection. I'm not going to talk about American field trials, but the British field trials are run on an actual day of shooting, not a simulated day. It's their first rule is in their field trial regulations is no dog can be tested on a bird that's been touched with human hands. So you can't pick up a bird and throw it in a field trial.
Wow.
So you're talking about you're evaluating the dogs while they're doing their real job. Therefore, the breeding selection is breeding for that, and it's mainly the major two characteristics, which are also the things that British field trial judges look for, is number one, calm demeanor, good manners, quiet, well mannered, and the second thing is track down a wounded bird. And if they don't see those two behaviors during a trial, they're not going to give a dog a place, probably, even if he just didn't get a chance to track down a cripple.
Well, you know, from that brief description, it sounds like your philosophy toward training fits right in. The book that caught my attention first, of course, was Absolutely Positively Gun Dog Training, and then learning more about all of that. And then, you know, we used to be a part of the horse world here at our house as well, and the whole idea of horse whispering and all of that. And you've been around all of that in a way. So, you know, bundle it all into one thing and tell us in a nutshell what your training philosophy is.
My training philosophy is show them how to do it right and repeat it and repeat it.
I get it.
and ignore anything they do wrong. No punishment, period.
Okay, so this sounds like a B.F. Skinner kind of a behavioral modification strategy. Am I close on that?
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. If you took demagogy of teaching in college, everybody, you know what I'm talking about there. But yeah, there's the opposite, which is, I guess we'll use the term aversion when you try and teach somebody or some animal, or in particular a gun dog, what not to do because it's no fun anymore. And I'm being political about that, but you focus primarily, if not completely, on just the opposite, just encouraging positive behavior or compliant behaviors, maybe a better term.
Setting it up so the dog does what I want.
Yeah.
And paying that.
Yeah.
And if I don't set it up right and he does it wrong, we just simplify it and come back again tomorrow and try again.
Yeah, so
it's really about neural pathways, quite frankly.
Okay, hold that thought because I love that idea. I'm going to tell you two things. I'm not the first to tell you. You have a friend in Delmar Smith, of course, who told us many years ago, never give a dog a chance to fail. And number two, I've just lost that thought, but the idea being that you just want to build from where they are to where you want them to go. In baby steps, it sounds like. And you just referenced, if it ain't working, go back a few steps, if you will, if I'm interpreting you right. Am I on the right track?
If the dog can't do it, then the trainer set it up wrong, and he needs to rejigger it and make it simpler, and then come back
I
one or
get
two days later and
I get
step it
that.
up.
And I'm a believer in that, letting it settle if you can, let them forget what they learned wrong. But you mentioned neural pathways, and I'm really intrigued by that. I'm working on it intently right now with my German wire hair, so I've got a personal interest in this. Tell me how you create those pathways.
You get the exact, but let me give you an example
Great.
of there's a every dog trainer that wants to be really good needs to read a book called The Talent Code by a guy named Daniel Coyle. And it's all about centers of excellence for world-class athletes, musicians, singers, basketball players. And my favorite example is John Wooden, who's UCLA's basketball coach back in the 70s. He won in a 12-year period, won I think 10, 9 or 10 NCAA championships. And his principles are number one, don't look for a big, quick improvement. Seek the small improvement one day at a time. That's the only way it happens. And when it happens, it lasts. It means it goes into long-term memory. And then he shows the importance of repetition until automaticity cannot be overstated. And then he says repetition is the key to learning. That is how you achieve excellence in training either athletes or dogs or horses, all the same way. And you're setting it up where they do it right, and you're doing it in small pieces of progress
Well,
gradually.
let's do exactly that, just so that we kind of grok this whole thing a little bit more completely. I get it. I was lucky enough to meet Coach Wooden back in the day in his prime, in fact. But most people haven't understood, quite his philosophy, which is incredible and very deep. You know it way better than most of us. But let's take a simple skill, and let's take a Labrador because you're very familiar with them. We want this dog to go from at heel, 25 yards out into the yard and pick up that bumper and bring it back. So I get it. And most of those dogs will do it without any coaxing at all because that's what they're born to do. Pardon me. But if they won't, how are we going to break that into the bite-sized pieces where they will always excel?
You're going to ask for 10 feet the first time instead of 25.
Okay, I get that, and I'm there. But how do we get them to actually understand that they're supposed to go pick it up and put it in their mouth and bring it back?
They're born with that.
Okay.
That what you're really asking me is, in my mind, what you're really asking me is, how do I deal with the effect of the punishment that taught him not to do
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. See, that's why you're a trainer and I'm an amateur.
Let me give you my favorite example for, well, puppies If puppies quit retrieving, it's due to punishment. And the first example is you're sitting there watching television in the evening and the puppy comes into the living room carrying the wife's Ferragamo shoe in his mouth, and you step over there, grab the shoe, whack him on the snout, say, "No, no," and you go back to watch the television. And 2 days, 2 days later, you go out in the yard and throw him a dummy, and he runs out there and sniffs it and doesn't pick it up. It's because you trained him not to do that 2 days before.
Oh, amen to that. And you're absolutely right. I'm gonna I agree 100%. In my own book, I talk about dogs thinking literally and linearly. And and we are more abstract thinkers most of the time. Sometimes we're not, especially after three or four beers. But so you know, we forget that a dog puts two and two together and always gets four. Always. And that's a great example. By the way, everybody, you're listening to Robert Milner, the author of Absolutely Positively Gun Dog Training. You can get it, among other things, at duckhillkennels.com and other places as well. I'm Scott Linden. You're listening to the Upland Nation podcast. So instead of punishing a dog because they retrieved the wrong thing, Robert, what should we have done in that case? Because that is just a classic.
Oh, you go over there, you get him to come on to you with the shoe, and you put your hand on the shoe and pat him on the head, say thank you for that nice delivery to hand. And you put the shoe where the dog can't get it. Here's the other one on puppies quitting retrieving. It's the insidious one, which is puppies are using 90% of their energy when they're under 6 months. They're using most of their energy to grow. And when you go out and throw 15 or 20 retrieves out in the yard because it's fun, and we've bred the off switch out of these dogs, and after about the fifth one, he's starting to get muscle burn and heat build up, and he's getting uncomfortable, but we've selectively bred him to retrieve, so he ain't quitting. And so he'll keep doing that for a while, but it's cumulative. So a week or two down the line, you're finally going to hit his limit, and he's going to quit retrieving, and you're going to say, "He's not worth a damn.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that dog?"
You know, I agree 100%. I've maybe because I'm lazy and I don't, you know, but I do not want my dog to fail in training. So I made kind of a rule around here. If my dog does something right three times, we're on to the next project.
Yeah.
And
go ahead. Well, I would say twice is fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Most people train too long as well. Because whatever the little piece of lesson is that they have learned that day needs to go into long-term memory, and that means it needs to be clear-cut, and the dog needs to go into a low-distraction environment, preferably where he can take a nap before you do anything else. If you go do five different behaviors in the same training session, you're going to be putting scrambled eggs into long-term memory.
So if I hear you right, Robert, you're saying dog performs well a couple times on whatever it is. Put him up for a bit.
Put him up.
Let him think about it, if you will.
Well, I'd say put him up and put him in the kennel.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it for the day.
Okay. All right. So, you know, if somebody sends their dog to a pro trainer, and I don't want your trade secrets, but that dog gets, I mean, a good pro trainer is going to work with that dog, you know, a few times a day on a few things, but that dog is primarily pondering and napping over these things most of the day, isn't he?
It is a basic inherent flaw to work a dog 3 or 4 times a day. Okay. The University of Copenhagen did a study in, 2006 or so, on frequency and duration of training sessions. And they divided a group of 50 beagles into 4 groups, and one group was trained, they call them W1, was 1 day a week, 1 session on that day. W3 was 1 day a week, 3 sessions on that day. D1 was 5 days a week, daily, 1 session on each of those days. And then D3 was 5 days a week with 3 sessions on each of those days. And they documented all that stuff. And the dog that learned the fastest and the highest was trained 1 day a week, 1 session a day. The dog that trained to the lowest level and the slowest progress was D3, 5 days a week, 3 sessions a day.
Wow.
So that is more, it's an example of the superstition that we've got in traditional dog training. We've got a lot of stuff in there that's very counterproductive.
Well, you know, what's funny is I used to be a musician, and theoretically I'm trained to play pretty well, or was back in the day. And we were up against the same thing. As a conservatory student, we were ordered basically to practice all the time, all day, every day, if you could, 20 times a day, if you could get to the practice room. And every day, if you laid off on Sunday, you felt guilty the whole rest of the week. So you're saying, the dog's going to absorb more and perform better when it messes. Now, how does that jibe with your idea of repetition and rewarding positive reps?
Well, you have two things to juggle. You need the repetitions on the nerve pathway, but you've got to have the will to do it as well, and the eagerness. You're training emotional state as well as a specific behavior. You have to think of it in those terms.
So what do you do the rest of the week?
What I tell people that are in love with training, they got to do it every day, get 2 or 3 dogs.
Yeah.
Or if you want to train an hour or two a day, get 5 or 6 dogs, and you will be more successful.
Yeah, you
can take that same dog, that one dog, and you'll just take 10 times longer to get where you want to go.
I get it. And that will build those neural pathways. So the dog's not just laying around in the kennel the rest of the time. It's probably socializing, maybe getting a whole bunch of exercise. What else happens at Duck Hill Kennels?
They're gonna sit in the kennel the rest of the time, except for they'll take a walk, and they'll get a couple of walks, and they'll get 1 training session.
And they will not learn the wrong things that way as well.
They will not learn the wrong things, and they will learn the right things 3 to 4 times as fast.
Wow, you've just saved me hours per week, Robert.
Yeah. Well, if you want to spend those hours on dog training, get a few more dogs.
No, that's not my job. My job is to talk.
Yeah. On your musician status, the world-class musicians practice about 3 hours a day.
Yeah.
And that's... read that book, Talent Code. It applies to musicians, dog trainers, horse trainers, basketball coaches, baseball, etc.
What you just described is the difference between human years and dog years. If the dog gets 10 minutes once a week, we could get 3 hours once a day and it'd probably be proportional, but that's for scientists to decide. Hey, you're listening to the Upland Nation podcast. That's Robert Milner. He founded Wild Rose Kennels. His new-ish operation is Duck Hill Kennels. Learn more about him at duckhillkennels.com. His book should be a Bible for anybody who thinks they know their way around dog training. Absolutely Positively Gun Dog Training is one of the many books available. Learn all about it at duckhillkennels.com. We're going to take a quick break right here. Robert, put your feet up and relax a little bit. I'll get back to you in a moment. In the meantime, everybody else, pay attention. We've got a lot more to talk about, both with Robert Milner and then a couple things coming up. First, the Handle It segment of the show where we, I share something I learned the hard way so you don't have to with your dog. And then, of course, public access, a suggestion for you for this season coming up. But first, write this down or go to your iPad or whatever else you use, drtims.com, drtims.com. My performance dog food has been for a long, long time for a bunch of reasons. One, including the antioxidants that Tim Hall puts into his foods. And there are a variety of formulations there, so you'll find one no matter what time of year it is or what kind of dog you have. Learn more at drtims.com. And when you're there, place your first order and get 30% off by using the code UplandNation. DRTIMS.com, 30% off. Upland Nation is the code. Now, I know it's a pain, but wearing hearing protection in the field is probably a really good idea. I've been there and done that. I've worn them all. But my friend Jack Homa at ESP, Electronic Shooters Protection, has convinced me. Well, mainly through his technology. Learn more about how he makes these things and how they work at espamerica.com. You know how it works on the range. You know, you can hear the trap machine if you've got good hearing protection, but you don't hear the gunshots. You can hear your buddies joking about your shooting abilities. Well, I can. I don't think they know they are heard by me, and maybe I should keep that a secret. But in the field as well, you can hear the birds flushing, you can have a conversation, you can hear the quail calling, you can hear your dog's beeper, your dog's bell. All of those things are possible if you have great hearing protection from espamerica.com. And now a tip. We're talking about dog training and one of my favorite subjects, by the way, if you hadn't gathered yet. The Handle It segment is brought to you by Cabela's. We're calling you, or talking to you at least, from the Cabela's podcast studio. 40% off and select products in their Cabela's Camping Classic. You know where to find them. Now, vis-a-vis our discussion with Robert Milner, the old adage goes, hope for the best, plan for the worst. Well, Flick is getting steadier by the day, as I described earlier, on flushing and falling birds. One way to ensure that always takes place is to stage manage virtually everything early on. So I use launchers, I use check cords, I use e-collars, I use all of those things so that nothing can go wrong. Think about the worst case scenario. Plan for it. Allow for all sorts of ways to prevent it from happening. Do most of your training in the yard where you have a little bit more control. And then when you're ready, take as much of that out into the field as you can for training. And then more training. And then more training. Hope for the best. Plan for the worst. I bet that's probably something that Robert Milner, the author of Absolutely Positive Gun Dog Training, would agree with. Robert, am I on the right track there?
You're close. Where I would change it would be get them great in the yard and then bring the distraction to the yard.
Yeah.
Rather than taking the dog off to a new place to meet it.
Yeah, you know, good point. And, you know, that reminds me of something I learned four or five dogs ago from a good friend who's a behaviorist. He used the term place learning. You know what I'm talking about there? So obviously at some point you do have to go away from the yard, but you're right. You know, little baby steps again, you know, creating those neural pathways, like you said, right?
Yeah. And they're going to, all the cues in the yard are going to help the dog do what you want him to do.
Well, you used a term that I really like, and I don't use it enough. I'm going to steal it from you. I've probably stolen it from other people and forgotten, but cues. You know, I mentioned the half hitch, and Rick and Ronnie and Delmar before that used that half hitch around a dog's flank, and it could be any number of other things. It could be verbal, it could be oral, it could be anything. What kind of cues do you use when you're training dogs in a positive way?
Oh, boy. You just opened yourself up for a lecture here.
That's why I'm here. That's why they pay me the big bucks.
Cues are very important, and it's very important that they be separate and distinct. And that means keep your mouth shut when you're training, except for the cue. And your dog will be able to do 100 times better, 10 times better anyway. Pavlov, not only did he do his, I don't want to get too scientific here, not only did he do the salivation experiment, he did one on cue discrimination. And he trained a behavior A cued by tone A, and he trained a behavior B cued by tone B. And on the same dog, and he started the tones were on a tunable signal generator, and he started tuning tone A closer to tone B, and when they got pretty close together and the dog started having trouble figuring out which one he was to respond to, he literally had a nervous breakdown and got very fearful in his experimental apparatus, and et cetera, et cetera. That is a very powerful, powerful phenomenon. And it made me become very careful about being very precise with my cues and not punctuating them with emotion, shall we say. And it makes the dogs operate a lot better.
Well, okay, so we don't have a tone generator, though. So what are we using?
So you just keep, you use or whatever words you want. Let's take recall. Recall is the most important thing that a dog learns. Coming when called. Typically, back in the old days when I was training, and in the not so old days when I was training, it would be, I was using here, and it would be here, damn it, come over here. And the dog is sitting there saying, I wonder which one he means. Does it mean one here, three here's, or three here's with a damn it? Because they're just hearing a noise.
Sure.
And they don't know the meaning of it. When I got that concept digested, my dog training improved a whole lot.
I get it. Yeah. In fact, yeah, you just cited my every single one of my German wire hair pointers first names has been damn it.
Yeah.
But okay, so I get that. So what the cues are, what some people would call commands, people might call them requests. Mm-hmm. But what about praise? How do we reward these dogs down the road if they respond positive, if they respond correctly
to it? Works. It's fine. It works. The more you use it as a tool, the better it'll work.
Mm-hmm.
Which means you don't give it gratuitously all the time.
Yeah.
So a guy named John Pilley that did he's a retired, he's dead now, but he was a PhD in animal behavior and was at Wofford College for 20 years and retired. And his retirement project was to train a border collie puppy, and he was going to train it to recognize as many words as he could. And the way he taught it a word was he'd have it to go, he named a toy, and he'd say, get the frog, or get the circle, or get the plastic white dummy. And he got up over 1,000 of that.
Wow.
That dog learned.
Wow.
Let me give you my two rules of dog training. Number one is dogs are smart.
Yeah.
And number two is dogs do what pays. So as the trainer needs to keep it challenging for the dog and not worry not on initiating, recognize that he is smart. And number two is what is number two? I just had senior moment. dogs do what pays. Make sure you're paying him.
Yeah.
And make sure you know what a payment is.
Well,
that's.
I know what I use. I pay off my dog in any number of ways. Whether it's a verbal praise, or it's depending on the skill I'm trying to teach, it might be a food treat, it might be a release, it might be something that I, you know, scratching him on his chest. What do you use most of the time in that regard?
Oh, whatever I can think of.
Yeah.
Whatever the dog wants.
Yeah.
I'll use water and hot weather. I'll use an opportunity to chase a squirrel when I know where the squirrel is. I'll use frequently a retrieve reward.
Yeah, yeah.
Tug of war, and yes, tug of war is okay for retrievers.
Yeah.
It's my favorite reward because it's always with me.
Yeah, that's true.
I carry around a pocket full of treats.
Yeah. Yeah, that can get kind of messy. I found that the hard way, but I still use it when I need to. But you know, so what we ought to be doing, and it, yeah, I sound like a broken record. Records are these big black things that go around at 33 RPMs. By the way, if you're under age 40, you probably don't know that, but they make sound, usually music. But if I was on that session, you can judge for yourself. But so. What, you know, I've used them all. I guess what I'm getting at is we need to watch the dog. We need to learn what the dog really values. Is that a good way to look at it?
Exactly. Yes.
So if we're given food all the time and he doesn't really give a rip about food, maybe we do need to give him a retrieve or a squirrel chase or whatever.
Or find a food that he does like.
Yeah, there you go. Know, yeah, it might be the wrong food. Yeah.
That's pretty easy to put 8 or 10 different treats on the floor and see which one he likes.
That looks like a dog food commercial.
Yeah, it's pretty simple.
That's Robert Milner. He is the author of the book Absolutely Positively Gun Dog Training. Learn more about all of the things he does and the way he thinks at duckhillkennels.com. I'm Scott Linden. This is the Upland Nation podcast. You know, when we arranged this little discussion, you mentioned starting to work on some things. Well, number one, first off, that there is fundamentally a book online that you can just download if you're a retriever guy. I think that's important. So go to the website to learn that. But also, you and I have talked about maybe doing some things online. And so are you still working on that?
Oh yeah. I do a 2-day class that takes you through the history of Labradors starting in the 1500s and up to the present and how they got to where they are and all the behavioral, stuff on the easy way to train a dog. I like to keep everything very simple, and I find that the dog likes to keep everything very simple.
Yeah, and so does this guy. So I'm with you on that 100%. Hey,
I do a 2-day class once a month on that thing at the kennel, and I've just started putting it on Zoom. It costs $150 to come to the kennel, but it's free on Zoom.
Wow.
And the next one is May the 22nd and 23rd.
Great. Great. Perfect timing. All right.
Eight hours, 2 days in a row.
Okay, everybody, sign up now. I bet for your $150, you'll get a lot more than that amount.
Yeah, well, the Zoom is free.
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Yeah, the Zoom's free.
All right. So let's go to the world of client relations and the big challenges that these people bring you for dog training and hunting. What are the most common things that you end up having to try and fix for people?
Deliver to hand and coming. Well, 80% of training of any dog is the recall. If you got a foolproof on the idiot proof on the recall, you're 80% of the way to wherever you need to go. I don't care what the dog's job is.
Yeah. So how do we solve some of those? I've got a hard-headed wire hair. You deal with Labradors. Somebody else, Shudder, has a Springer Spaniel. No, just joking. That was a joke, everybody. How are we going to get a dog that's reluctant to come back to us?
I'm going to tell you the quick one. Version, the abbreviated version is... First of all, pick a recall signal. Pick two recall signals. You're going to start with the one you don't want because you're going to fail the first time.
What a great! Okay, you just saved everybody a lot of angst. That's great. All right, carry on. I'm sorry.
And the second one is the one you really want. So you're going to get a notebook and a little pocket notebook. Draw a vertical line, divide each page into two columns, number the line, number the horizontal line so you know how many trials. And you take that dog out, take it for walks. And you call him every once in a while. You start out close to you, you call him. And I use their name because it's, for me, recall is the emergency procedure.
Sure.
When there's a Mack truck coming down the highway and he's headed for it, I want him to stop right then. And I don't want a whistle because I might not know where my whistle is.
Sure.
So I'm going to use a verbal, and I'm usually going to use his name because I'm usually with several other dogs, and I want the instant recall from one of them. And I'm going to take him for walks, and I'll start at 5 feet, and I'll call him Rover. And he comes to me, I'll pay him. I'll give him a treat.
Mm-hmm.
We'll pretty much work that out distance until he's coming from 200 yards. And I'll start looking for distractions to get him around so I can let him learn to come away from distractions. And I'll start close to me and far from the distraction the first few, and then move out the distance away from me. And I'll put them in rabbit pens, pheasant pens, duck pens, dog parks. I want them coming 100% of the time, all the time. But the first time I did this, I let the dog get out about 30 yards, and I say, Rover, and he doesn't come. And I say, Rover, Rover, Rover. And then, Rover, 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 come here, damn it. And every time I say Rover, I've got to write it down in that notebook.
Uh-huh.
My two columns are correct response, CR, and failed response. And when I say Rover and he comes, I get to put down a CR left-hand column. When I say Rover, 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 I've got to put down 5 FRs for the next 5 lines down there, because I've had 5 failed responses. And you can dig a hole to China real quick with that.
So is that when you start using your alternate command word, Q?
No, no.
When do you do that?
I do that when I fail on the, when I get a week or two down the line and I count up all the failed responses and correct responses and find out I'm at 60% or something. That's a failure.
Yeah.
So I tear it up and start over again so that I don't have a poisoned cue to overcome.
Got it. Love that.
Every failed response costs you 10 correct responses.
I believe it. We've talked in the past with other trainers about the proportion of praise to correction, if you will. And it sounds about the same there. So, yeah. Beyond recall, what is another critical cue/skill that most hunting dogs need that we don't do a good job training?
For the bird dog world, it's sit to flush or stay to flush.
Yeah.
Depending on whether it's a pointer or a flusher. Because they can get shot when they're chasing a flushing bird.
Oh, I know, and I knock wood. I've never seen it, but I've heard it. So I'm, this is right in my wheelhouse today because that's what we're working on. You got some tips for me? my young wire hair, he's solid on pigeons. He's less solid on valley quail, but we're in that transitioning period.
Let him watch a whole lot of them fly away.
Yeah.
So that he gets to retrieve less of them, but gets to see a lot more of them. Changes the value of the bird for him. Makes that flying away bird worth less.
You're absolutely, and that jibes with, of course, everybody else who says, oh, train on wild birds and they'll teach themselves. It there is some truth to that, and that's exactly why.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I
knew an old a British trainer that was very short and succinct. And somebody asked, it was a woman, asked her, what do you do for a dog that's chasing birds? That means chasing freshly flush birds. In England, they're not supposed to chase them.
Sure. Yeah.
And she said, let them chase them. And what she meant was, they're not going to catch any of them anyway. They're birds of wild when they are being shot, and they're not going to catch them anyway. They'll learn pretty quick that they're not, and then it makes them worthless, maybe worthless, so they quit chasing them.
Yeah, like you said, encourage the dog to do what pays and quit doing what doesn't pay. It's pretty clear in that case, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, what I teach people, and frankly, on retrievers for flushing dogs, is number one, the only thing you got to train before you go hunting, with a Labrador is you need to you need to train him to sit the flush.
Yeah.
So you just walk him along and at heel, and throw a dummy out and have him sit. And yep. You do that a few times, he's going to automatically start sitting when you throw a dummy out. But you don't let him pick any of them up. And then you just throw one behind you every once in a while as a payment for the nice sit to flush that he just gave you.
I'm interested because we're at that point. We're using frozen game birds for that exact yeah. drill right there. But you said something that I think a lot of us haven't thought about. The big dead bird falls in front of us. He, in our case, you know, in the pointing world, we want him to stand yeah. still. Whoa. Yeah. Your world, you want him to sit. It depends on who's what kind of dog. But then you're yeah. lobbing the reward bird, if you will, in the other direction.
Yeah, yeah. Reward them behind you.
And the reason for that, just so that I have it clear in my own feeble mind.
So they're expecting something behind them rather than it's flying away.
Ah, ha, 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 ha. So it's not a reward for chasing.
It's a reward for not going after the one you just sent out front.
Yeah, and a lot of guys will, of course, go out and pick them all up, even shot birds in a hunting situation, for that very reason, yeah, I would imagine. Yeah. They may not know that's yeah. what it is, but I
the
get
more
it.
You do, the more you do that, the steadier the dog's going to get.
I'm loving it because there's yeah. You know, a flying bird, a falling bird, there's never any forward progress by the dog. That is so clear. Right. Thank you. Right. I mean, that was worth its weight in electricity, which is all I can give you. Well, this, you know, we barely scratched the surface here, and I want to encourage everybody to go and read a whole bunch of this stuff at duckhillkennels.com. Get the book. It's called Absolutely Positively Gun Dog Training. It's going to change your philosophy, if not your life, and your dog is going to be better off for it. The author, again, Robert Milner, Duck Hill Kennels. He's been around the block a few times, taught a few people a little bit about dog training over the years, and I'm just intrigued. Can we do this again down the road sometime, Robert?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to.
So would I. So with that in
mind, I'm going to email you a copy of my class schedule.
Great, great.
Send me an email so I'll have your email address.
I'll do all of that, and then we'll post all that up as well. And everybody else there, you know how to find him, duckhillkennels.com. To be continued. But in the meanwhile, Robert Milner, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thanks for spending an hour with everybody here in the Upland Nation.
Well, Scott, I appreciate it very much. At this stage of my life, my job is to make life better for the dogs. So anything I can do in that direction is greatly appreciated.
You did just that, and it is greatly appreciated. Thank you, and have a great day.
Thank you, Scott. You have a good day.
But the rest of you, stay with me. We've got a lot more to cover, including that This Land Is Your Land public access tip. It's coming up right here on the Upland Nation podcast. Quick word from Gunner Kennels. Free shipping, of course, at gunner.com. It's the only crate on the market to offer built-in stainless steel tie-down pins. All right, I know that's just a little minutia that you maybe didn't really care about, except when it comes to safety. All other tie-down pins on all other dog crates pulled off on impact. How much is your dog worth? Well, they haven't got that calculator at gunner.com, but they got all sorts of great reasons, including some stunning videos on why Gunner Kennels will protect your dog better than any other kennel on the market. Learn more at gunner.com. And learn more about dog training collars and all the related gear at dogtra.com. for your needs in that world, I will give you 10% off. Use the code SLUN10 and get 10% off at dogtra.com, including on my TNB dual collar. If you like working two dogs at the same time, but you don't like the hassles that come with a touch screen, especially if you're wearing gloves, look at the TNB dual. Two sets of buttons, no toggling back and forth. Did I say no toggling back and forth? Let me just repeat that. No toggling back and forth. Many bundles are now on sale at dogtra.com as well. Free shipping on anything over $200, including the TNB dual, and 10% off if you use the code SLUN10. And that is our cue to talk a little bit about do-it-yourself hunting, public access, walk-in, whatever else you want to call it. We call it all of that, and depending on the state you're in, it could be public ground, it could be private ground. You want to learn more about that topic, go to my new website, findbirdhuntingspots.com, brought to you by our friends at Huron, South Dakota, the Ringneck Nation. Now, I don't have a spot for you this time. I have a suggestion in terms of a strategy. As you well know, or you should, this land is your land. Millions of acres of publicly owned ground that we citizens hire folks like the Bureau of Land Management or the Forest Service to administer on our behalf. I only tell you that because sometimes we lack the empowerment that we really ought to have as we try to negotiate the vast, faceless bureaucracies that control information about those lands that we own. I'll never forget talking to one so-called expert in one of those so-called expert agencies who told me there were no valley quail in the entire state, even though in the past three seasons I'd shot dozens of them there. So, you know, go at it with a grain of salt, but take advantage of some of the knowledge that some of these bureaucrats actually do have. There are some good ones and there are some not so good ones. Be polite, but be persistent. And eventually you'll probably get a nugget here and a nugget there of information that might be of value to you on your next out-of-area public land do-it-yourself walk-in hunt. Yeah, it takes a little bit of work, but gosh almighty, sometimes it pays off. I've had just the opposite experience many times as well. So, you know, it cuts both ways. Look for the good ones, jettison the bad ones. All right, as I mentioned earlier, my good friends in Huron, South Dakota, welcome you. Learn more about all their walk-in areas at hunthuronsd.com. Last I counted, they had 124,000 acres of public access within 60 miles of town. In town's pretty fun as well. And just one quick reminder, get your hearing checked, protect it too. Go to espamerica.com and find out how, and more particularly, find out why. Well, I hope you've enjoyed the Upland Nation podcast as I have in giving it to you. Thanks again to Robert Milner for all of his wisdom, decades and decades worth. And by the way, thank you for your service also, Colonel. Thank you, listeners, for being a part of the Upland Nation. Want to talk more? Go to the Upland Nation or the Wing Shooting USA Facebook pages. Tell all your friends. They can listen anytime at uplandnation.com. Do me a big favor, rate us or review us wherever you get your podcasts. It helps a lot. We want everybody to know more about the Upland Nation and the podcast in particular. I know we're still on a pretty short lead, but we can still correspond with and be close to family and friends, literally or figuratively. And of course, this is a great time to spend more time with our dogs. We will be hunting this fall. I hope to see you in the field. In the meanwhile, enjoy the rest of your day, and thank you again for listening. I'm Scott Linden.